بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. حضرت سليمان عليه السلام had constructed the بيت المقدس and at the completion he got onto the Sakhra, dome of the rock, expressed his gratitude. Allah Ta'ala, you have allowed me to complete this and give me the tawfiq to offer shukr and gratitude for accomplishing this. Every step of a path of a Nabi is a lesson. First, he's offering thanks that he's been allowed to complete it, and then thanks that he's been given the opportunity to construct this. He had a big feast arranged. Hundreds and thousands of cattle, sheep, etc. were sacrificed, and he fed it to the people. And then he made several du'as that a person that comes here without any other intention but to perform namaz, for the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala, Allah Ta'ala allow him to leave the masjid with all his sins forgiven, like the day he was born. Person has come in with some need, Allah Ta'ala fulfill his need. If he's suffering from some ailment, Allah Ta'ala see that he is cured. He is taking some type of asylum from some enemy, Allah Ta'ala grant him that asylum and that refuge. At the end, he realized that there is some finishing touches of the house, of the Baitul Muqaddas. And normally the finishing touches, they finish you. Takes a lot of time and they finish you. Now he estimated the approximate time is going to be about 1 year, but Malak al-Maut was there to receive him. Now it's a quandary. Now on the one side he is commanded to accomplish this construction, then his time has already approached. Now look at a Nabi. Every step of the road is a lesson. Every step of the road is a lesson. So he is supervising the whole construction from within a glass chamber. And he had jinnat working for him. يَعْمَلُونَ لَهُ مَا يَشَاءُ. Whatever he wanted, and they got it built for him. مِن مَحَارِيبَ وَتَمَاثِيلَ وَجِفَانٍ كَالْجَوَابِ وَقُدُورِ الرَّاسِيَاتِ. Pots, immovable pots, right? And basins like ponds, like a reservoir, so big basins. So these were constructed, and the things, the people that assisted and cooperated with the jinnat. But now he realized that there is the finishing touches to the Baitul Muqaddas, and my time is up. Now I need to do this. So he stood from within the glass chamber and observing as though everything is going on. And the jinnat held him in a lot of awe. They wouldn't look at him face to face. The awe of the servant of Allah Ta'ala and Nabi of Allah Ta'ala is something different. The person that really gives himself to Allah Ta'ala, then Allah Ta'ala blesses him with a certain type of awe. Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had also been blessed with this, that all that was blessed could be perceived from a distance of approximately 500 kilometers. A distance of 500 kilometers, you can see now, you're entering into the company of someone that is very great. So this is a type of a defense that is given to a Nabi. So the jinnat won't look at him face to face, and he knows about it, that they're not going to look at him face to face. So he's got his glass chamber and is sitting from within and is reclining himself on his staff, giving them all the orders to do for the complete year and his year. So they're doing all the work as it completed, the whole work completed. Within that time, that staff, termites had eaten from within and the staff had dropped and he had fallen down. Now they realized he had already passed on. So now they estimated, alright, what was the duration for the termites to eat up this thing here? They found it was approximately 1 year. So they said to themselves, لَوْ كَانُوا يَعْلَمُونَ الْغَيْبَ مَا لَبِثُوا فِي الْعَذَابِ الْمُهِينَ. Had we had the knowledge of the unseen, then we would have been toiling in this type of labor. We toil in this labor because we didn't know that he passed on. Had we known that he had passed on, we would not toil like this. But he had us in captivity. Now, several things we learn from this. One is that jinnat don't have the knowledge of the unseen. Like many a times people make it appear, jinnat, and I got jinnat and jadu and whatever I got, and I got some powers, right? And I can see some things and some things can happen for me. Many a times it is misinformation, many times it is speculation, many a times it is shaitanic thoughts that are playing up with you. And you feel now that I'm getting some inspiration coming from Allah Ta'ala. Now, what guarantee do you have that it is from Allah Ta'ala? Whereas we don't deny the fact that pious people can receive and enjoy inspirations. But it's not a guarantee that whatever you've got is definitely God given. It's not, you've got no guarantee that it's divine. The only one that has got this type of guarantee is a Nabi. A non-Nabi, does he have that type of knowledge? He doesn't have that knowledge. Yes, it can support something that is already an obligation, namaz, and he's been inspired to get up for Fajr namaz and come for his namaz, inspired to get up for his tahajjud and perform the tahajjud salat. There are many people like that. So it's already an obligation, it's already a duty. You just have been given some type of inspiration to execute the duty. So that inspiration is not to establish any obligation. That type of inspiration is just specific to a Nabi, just confined to a Nabi. He gets an inspiration, and that inspiration is showing that this is a faraz. Ibrahim alayhi salam sees Ismail alayhi salam in a vision or in a dream. So it was the dream of a Nabi, the inspiration of a Nabi. The inspiration of a Nabi, that's wahi, and that's a command, that's an obligation. But a non-Nabi, if he saw that dream, how many hundreds of times he can see it, but he doesn't have the right to go and lay his son down and sort him. No, I also saw what Ibrahim alayhi salam saw, so I need to do also what he had done. Because your mind, shaitan can interfere with your mind, your nafs can interfere with you, your own thoughts can have the better over you. You do not know whether it was your own thoughts, you do not know whether it was shaitan, you do not know whether you are hallucinating, you have got a mental problem, right? So how can you equate yourself with a Nabi? A Nabi is divine. He is protected. He is guarded. He is secured. But anybody besides a Nabi has got no security. Sayyid Abdul Qadir Jilani Rahmatullahi, who we call the head of all the awliya kiram, right? Now in one of his spiritual states, right? In a deep meditation, in a deep spiritual state, and he sees Malaika, and he sees Noor, and he sees a lot of something very spectacular, like you don't see it at all. And he finds a great spiritual upliftment in all that. He's experiencing a great deal of thirst. Now, with this thirst comes a golden goblet served to him. So he thinks to himself, but gold is impermissible. For any person to use gold is impermissible. For women, they can use it, but they can use it only as an ornament. But to use it as a utensil, for them also is not permissible. Now, how can I use this? This is gold. How can I use this goblet? So a voice calls out, we are the ones that declare halal and haram. We have declared all this as halal for you. But the voice is coming from the unseen, and it's telling him that who it is. Who is it that declares halal and haram? It is we that declares halal. It is we who declare halal. It is we who declare haram. So we are offering it to you, and we have declared this to be as halal for you. So now, in the state now, he's worried for a moment, and then a thought comes to him, but there is nothing that comes to cancel the sharia of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's sharia is to last till the day of Qiyamah. There's nothing comes to cancel it. When he thought about this and he said that there's nothing coming to cancel this, and he said, no, la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. Immediately when he said la hawla, all that light and whatever he was seeing, stars and light and illumination, everything disappeared. Khalas. As everything disappeared and he could see shaitan escaping, shaitan says to him, ya Abdul Qadir, it was just your knowledge that saved you. So he says, go mardood, mardood, and rejected, get away. Now you're running away, and whilst you're running away, you're still trying to mislead me. It wasn't my knowledge, it was just the grace of Allah Ta'ala that saved me on this occasion. So when you're getting this type of inspiration, feelings, etc., that inspiration and that feeling is not a guarantee that it is divine, it is from Allah Ta'ala. That type of guarded inspiration is only exclusive with the Nabi, exclusive to the Rasul, to the Messenger of Allah Ta'ala. And besides a Rasul and besides a Nabi, nobody's inspiration can be called, can be termed exclusive. Yes, they may go through inspirations, we do not deny. The righteous people may receive some type of inspiration. They may get some kashf at some time. Right? But it isn't defined. It isn't something that they can say that it's an obligation that we have to execute this. No, you can't say that. Yes, it's an inspiration. It's a help from Allah Ta'ala. It's a support. It's an assistance from Allah Ta'ala. Allah Ta'ala grants it to whomsoever He pleases. أَوْحَيْنَا إِلَىٰ أُمِّ مُوسَىٰ أَنْ أَرْضِعِي. Like other pious people, then Musa a.s. mother was also inspired. Then give him the suck. فَإِذَا خِفْتِ عَلَيْهِ فَأَلْقِيهِ فِي الْيَمِ. But as soon as you feel afraid about his life, you are threatened now about his life. Because the Fir'auni police just got to know. When they get to know that there is a child, they're coming in and they're slaughtering the child straight away. So you give the suck to the child, so the child becomes fond with you. But the moment you apprehend some fear, then you go and throw him into the sea. And inna radduhu, and she's receiving this inspiration that we will return this child back to you and appoint him as a Rasul. So a woman is not a Nabi. Did you hear of a woman being a Nabi? A woman is not a Nabi, but she can also receive inspiration. And the inspiration doesn't have to be wrong, the inspiration was true. Exactly like the inspiration told that you do this, you go and deposit the child into the water will bring that child back to you. We will return with all honor and all respect. Sometimes we hear these type of things, inspiration, someone making tawis and whatever, whatever. And then we take it as God sent, it's an inspiration. It's inspiration from Allah Ta'ala. You're not supposed to be attaching that amount of importance. A simple thing to understand, that a tawiz or a jinnat giving some information, right, if that was conclusive, right, any tawiz or any through any type of inspiration you're getting some type of information, if that was conclusive, then at some point it could have been used in a court of law. Okay, see, my tawiz told me this. Okay, this person is the person that caused all the problem. And the court could have ruled against him. But did you ever hear? Any time in the annal of Islam, in the annal of Islamic history, from Nabi Sallam's time till now, any time a decision was based on the information passed by some amil or some raqi, some catcher, did you ever hear that? Ever hear that? Anything was based on that, not based on it at all. So it was not based on that, that means it's not conclusive. If it was conclusive, then they would have acted upon it. But the fact that they're not acting upon it means it's not conclusive. Then how can we take it conclusive when all the courts, all Islamic courts, from the time of Umar right till today, no Islamic courts based their judgment based on the information passed on by a raqi or by an amil or by a catcher or whatever. Now we take this thing so seriously. And someone must come and give something ordinary, something, you know, out of the normal, we're going to go by it. Sometimes we don't know whether to laugh, whether to take it serious. You know, that went to that raqi, he got his catcher. So his catcher got the whole jamaat, 1,000 jinnat, he caught them. Caught them and he gave them a bayan, all of them became Muslim. One shot, he became Musliman. Like became Musliman and then he sent them all for once in Jamaat, all went Jamaat. But after 3 days perhaps, they must have cut a line from the Jamaat and came back again. Don't you hear the relapse? For 2-3 days there was no symptoms. After the 2-3 days, there was a relapse again. So now, they went out, they became Musliman, they went out for 4 months, and in 2-3 days stepped they back. It's all games. It's another topic on its own, but my mind just went on this, just to make us understand that this is not something conclusive. Whilst there is a thing like treatment, but it's not a conclusive thing. It's not a thing that you would say that it was 100%. Take the treatment, forget all this other fantastic stories that they talk about. Leave the stories. Whereas I say that there can be some substance in it. But really, don't go behind these things here. You will hallucinate, you will begin to think about these things, and then when you begin to think about these things, then these hallucinations become like realities. Whereas it was just hallucination. You just thought about it, you saw something like that in your dreams. You know, I saw it in my dream also. Whereas you don't realize that you were hallucinating, you saw what you were hallucinating. Nothing beyond that. So the first thing that the jinnat realized, that we don't have the knowledge of the unseen. Had we had the knowledge of the unseen, we would have discovered that Sulaiman is dead already. It took us 1 year to understand that he's dead. And we only realized that he's dead when he fell, when he's fallen down. Then did we realize. خَرَّ تَبَيَّنَتِ الْجِنُّ أَلَّوْ كَانُوا يَعْلَمُونَ الْغَيْبَ مَا لَبِيثُوا فِي الْعَذَابِ الْمُهِينِ. It took them 1 year. But the second thing we also learned from this is that it's a very important lesson. Very, very important lesson. Sulaiman alayhi salam is instructed that you construct the Baytul Muqaddas, right? And he understands that I still have to do some finishing touches to this masjid. And my time is up. Now, how do I program myself? How do I program the finishing of the masjid? So he made some type of arrangements. He's gone into the glass chamber. He's sitting down, reclining against his staff. So the workers, what they think? They think Sulaiman is there and he's guarding over us. Right? So you see, in your absence, you need to make some type of arrangements for that work that has been commanded by Allah Ta'ala to be accomplished. Whatever duty Allah Ta'ala has commanded, you see to it, and if it's not done in your lifetime, then you are making suitable arrangements for its completion even after your lifetime. Or even in your absence, you got some dini work, for example, right? It's your duty, it's your obligation. Then you treat it as an obligation. When you treat it as an obligation, then you are around or you are gone abroad. For example, now, you have to do that work. Right? You have to teach the child. For some reason, there was a mayyad, or there was some important work you had to attend to. Right? Now you've gone to attend to that important work, but you are trying to find out, that work that I was in charge of, is it being done? Who's doing it? How far it's gone? This person here, does he know his work? This building here, Islamic dini work, is it complete? The children that are my responsibility, are they performing their namaz? So in your absence or in your presence, your duties, your responsibilities, are you taking cognizance? This is what is called trust. This is what is called sense of responsibility. Some days back, there were some people coming here. Someone is talking of ISIS, someone talking of other stories, whatever the stories, right? Certain by Islam is not a complicated religion. It's a clear-cut, straight, pure, clean, easy religion. And Allah Ta'ala has categorized us in two categories. Right? The one category is that who's got the strength, who's got the stamina to go and confront situations. Right? The one that has got the strength and has got the stamina to confront situation, very great, we will applaud him, we will praise the person, then he must go out, go and do what he can. He's got the strength, he's got the stamina, he must do what he can do. And then there is the second category that feels that I don't have the strength, I don't have the stamina, I don't have all these things, right? Then he must act within his capacity. This person has got the strength, stamina, then he acts according to his capacity. This person that doesn't have the strength, he doesn't have the stamina, he acts according to his capacity. Right. Now the problem is that we don't want to be in this group, we don't want to be in that group. That group that has got the stamina, has got the strength, they must go 4 months, they can go leave their homes, go out in Jamaat, whatever, they've got the stamina to do it. So they must go, right? And they're doing the work. And they're doing it successfully. Then the second group that doesn't have the stamina, we know, alright, we have got some type of obligations, some type of duties, some type of responsibilities. Or perhaps we don't have that level of endurance. We'll go out for 1 week or something and we'll start become miserable. We will inconvenience someone else or someone else will inconvenience us. We'll not be able to tolerate the surroundings. We'll not be able to manage. So you make up your mind, if you belong to the first category, you go to the first category and work, strive, work hard, what you can do. And you can't then belong, then you come to the second group. In the second group, what will you do? You will do what is within your capacity. What's within your capacity, you can look after your home. What you need to do within your home, you need to see that the activities are carried out in your home. Namaz is on time. They're making zikr and tilawat mornings and evening, right? Making talim. Talim doesn't only mean fazail kitabs, but a little bit of this is ever some masail, etc. You should know. Right? Because you did the talim, for example, and this is the sawab for a certain amal. Like salatul tasbih you will perform, they will give you the fazilat that you did salatul tasbih, all your gunas will be maafed. Right? Where in the first rakat, in every rakat you did 75 times, subhanallah, walhamdulillah, wa la ilaha illallah, wallahu akbar. And you will read that, in each rakat 75 times, in 4 rakats it will amount to 300 times. Now, you learn that through the fazail. But then you need a masail kitab, a book of law. Because the masail kitab will tell you, see, you can perform your salatul tasbih at this time, but this is zawal time, you can't perform it. You only learned one perspective, that is the fazilat, and the other perspective you didn't learn, that in the prohibited time, you're not supposed to be performing salatul tasbih. Now you went and performed the namaz. Instead of getting sawab, you're getting guna. It was a prohibited time. You're not supposed to be doing it at the prohibited time. You can't go and tell anybody, why? What? I can't perform namaz. Namaz, performing namaz is haram. But who asked you, who told you that namaz is haram? But in this state that you are, in this time, you cannot perform the namaz. Like, you don't have wuzu, you can't perform the namaz. Nobody's asking not to perform namaz. But in the state that you are, you're not allowed to perform namaz. So in the time that you are, you're not allowed to perform namaz. Not that the namaz, you cannot perform the namaz, but in the state, in the time, you cannot perform the namaz. So the masail will give you parameters. The fazail will tell you, alright, do this. This will tell you the parameters that you can work within. And you don't have parameters, then you're going to mix up halal with haram. Each day you will start keeping roza. You want a nice, fantastic bayan you had on an Eid day, and you want to keep roza. Whereas it is a prohibited time, haram. You got up for Fajr namaz, and you feel very fresh, very, very enlightened. You got a beautiful dream now, you got up for Fajr namaz, so you got very, very enlightened. So today, instead of just performing 2 rakats of Fajr, I'm going to read 10 rakats of Fajr namaz. Is that acceptable or rejected? It's rejected. Only 2 we want from you at this time. You're not going to employ your own reasoning. Now he was overcharged, in place of reading 2 rakats, he wants to read 100 rakats. But no, you just perform the 2 rakats. So you need to know parameters. This masail kitab will teach you parameters, whilst the fazail will teach you that motivation. You need to have motivation. You need to have some energy to do the work. So at least within your capacity, you don't belong to the first category, you belong to the second category. Then what are you supposed to be doing within that category that you are? So you take care of your own home. Zikr, tilawat, Quran Sharif, Talim. Your own home. And as well as those people that you can easily exercise your influence upon. It's your staff. You can easily exercise your influence. Right? People that listen to you, your children, or people that come under your influence, you can easily exercise your influence upon them. Then you exercise your influence for everything else. You can exercise your influence. So for deen, why can't you exercise your influence over them? They will listen to you. And they take instructions from you for everything else. So why don't you use it for deen as well? Those people that come under your influence, at least work your influence over them. Do that much. Now, you don't belong to the first category. and you don't want to be in the second category, then where you are? You're not here, you're not there. When you are here, when you are neutral, then and you come to a gathering, say, oh, do this here. Go for jihad, go for this, go for this. See? But in your own space and time, are you doing anything? If you're not here, then at least be of the second category and do something at least. So you're not doing the first, you're not doing the second, you're not here, you're not there. Where are you then? Do something for your deen, for sustaining your deen, taking care of your akhirat, taking care of your life after that. What have you done? What arrangements have you made? See? So this is how shaitan confuses us. You don't want to talk here, now hey, let's go and do this thing here. You don't want to talk at that end, go and do this thing here. And then he takes you on a spin. So you're not doing anything constructive for yourself. Neither here nor there. Now, all this is a result of us not having one single guide. That you come to a surrounding, they talking about something, you want to go there. Something here, then you want to go there. Have a guide, thereby do this. A guide must be the person who saw the road from the beginning, from A to Z, from Alif to Wassalam, he's seen the road, he understand, alright. This is the person, this is the person that is coming up with us, and this is the journey that he wants to undertake. And this is his capacity, let's take him, right? So he'll understand the person, and he'll work out the itinerary, and he will take you across. But then you need to hold on to him. Mid-journey, they say, no, I'll go on to this. I'll go on. You're going to confuse yourself. You'll create confusion for other people. Hold on to one person. But provided that person that you are holding on to knows about the whole journey. He knows how it moves. He knows the ups and the downs. He knows at which point, what amount of speed to take up, and at which point, where to reduce the speed. He knows his Ramadan, he can pick up speed. He said, alright, read 200 durud, or 300 durud in Ramadan, right? Out of Ramadan, at least make it to 200 durud sharif. So he knows now, at which point, what type of speed to use. So this aspect of responsibility, you know, I say, Sulaiman alayhi salam, he knows that he's in charge. He's charged with what? With the construction of the Baytul Muqaddas. And he knows now his time is up. As his time is up now, he needs to deliver. But how can he deliver? His time is up, how is he going to deliver? So he's made the arrangements for his absence. So by the same token, when the father of the house, things have to be done. So he's monitoring, he has to be there personally. And if he can't, and it is excruciating circumstances, he can't be there. He needs to see that the amal of the house is taking place diligently. You can't say, no, one day we'll do it, one day we can't do it. These things have to be done. Like, you say you have to have the breakfast, right? And you have to have the tea and the toast for breakfast. I can't start off. So, this is like the makeup, your spiritual makeup. You can't start off the day without it. If you can't be there, then you're phoning up. And you're on the phone, you're seeing that they're doing it, alright? You've got five children, so you're asking the children, right, Ismail, Yusuf, Rabia, you're doing it. And I want to hear who's there, who's not there. You're listening to them, the recitation of the Quran Sharif. So you're taking it very seriously, you're taking it as a business. Then you will see some color coming onto the children. But you're going to take this deeny things as casual. They want to do it, they must do it. And they don't want to do it, they mustn't do it. And at the end they are failing, then you mustn't feel disappointed. You mustn't have it, you don't have a shock after that. Like in school things, circular things, you are diligent about it. They must do it, they must do the assignments, they must pass, they need the tuition, they must get the tuition done. Because I don't want to be having that embarrassment at the end of the year that, oh, you know, Hazrat, your son failed. He has to repeat the matric. You don't want to go through that embarrassment. You don't want to go through that disgrace. So to avoid that disgrace and embarrassment, the whole year round you are working. When it comes to that end, then I'm not suffering any type of disgrace and embarrassment. So by the same token, you don't want the child to be a sellout. You don't want the child to be betraying you. You don't want him to be a disappointment to you. So you're working right throughout. Inshallah, when you're working out like this diligently, the child will become a bundle of joy for you. Because you work right throughout, Allah Ta'ala will make the child something to be the coolness of your eyes. See, trust. Now how lightly we take trust. Trust, amanat, honesty. The hadith speaks so highly about it. La deena liman la amanat lahu. وَلَا إِمَانَ لِمَنْ لَا أَمَانَةَ لَهُ. A man doesn't have amanat, he doesn't have trust, really doesn't have iman. He doesn't have the consciousness of trust, of honesty, then really he's got no iman. So Nabi Sam has equated this amanat so much, he's so thickly with iman. Iman. You don't have trust, you don't have honesty, you're not an honest person, you don't have iman, finished. You are right off. You don't have a place in Islam. La imana liman la amanata lahu. You will see in the Quran Sharif, Surah Shu'ara, Allah Ta'ala speaks about six Anbiya alayhi salam consecutively. One, and then the second, and then the third, Nuh, and Hud, and Salih, and then Lud, and Shu'ayb alayhi salam. Five or six Anbiya consecutively, and every Nabi is saying, Inni lakum rasulun amin. Inni lakum rasulun amin. Allah Ta'ala could have worded it differently. He could have said that every Nabi was Amin. He could have said it like this. But why did Allah Ta'ala word it in this way? That each Nabi is coming in, and when his story is coming in, Allah is saying, Inni lakum rasulun amin. I am an honest Rasul. I am a trustworthy Rasul. Nuh alayhi salam is saying the same thing. Hud alayhi salam is saying it again. And Salih alayhi salam is saying it again. And Lut alayhi salam is saying it. And Shu'ayb alayhi salam, every person is saying the same message. Allah could have encapsulated it in just one word. Every Rasul was trustworthy. But why did he have to say this through the tongues of five different Anbiya alayhi salam repeatedly? One is going and is succeeded by the other. And the second is coming in and the third is going out. And so forth and so on. Why? To impress upon us the importance of this trust. Oh, how important this is. And that realization of the trust, the consciousness, that awareness of trust. Sometimes when we talk of trust, then our understanding of trust is just limited. Alright, this person gave me this portal to keep, so this portal is a trust in my safe. When he comes back, I'll return it to him. But the child of ours, do we consider it as a trust? The time of ours, do we consider it as a trust? This eyes of ours, do we consider it a trust? It's not yours. The eyes are not yours. The tongue is not yours. The ears are not yours. All these are the trust of Allah Ta'ala. Your time is also a trust from Allah Ta'ala. Do we consider these things as trust? As things that Allah Pak has given us. And these are supposed to be kept in trust. So therefore Allah Ta'ala is going to ask about it. Inna sam'a wal basara wal fu'ada kullu ulaika kana anhu mas'ula. About the eyes, about the ears, about the tongue, about the heart, you're going to be questioned. If it was your own, Allah Ta'ala wouldn't have asked you. But when Allah Ta'ala has entrusted this to you, so He's going to ask you because this was just a trust. It was held in custody by you. It was ours. We asked you to hold it. So because we asked you to hold it, therefore we'll ask you about it, that how did you use it? One person must use his eyes, you know. So in the dream he sees Allah Ta'ala speaking, that the whole world is my house. And all the inhabitants in this house are my children. Men and women, all mine, all mine. Right? The house, this entire universe is my house. And all these are mine. When they are all mine, right? Any person doesn't have the right to look lustfully at the next servant of mine. So because they belong to me, when they belong to me, then it's my personal property, my private property. When it's my private property, you don't have the right to look at that person. Like it is your daughter, right? Your daughter. And someone peeps into your house to get a look of your daughter while she is dressing up in her room. See, do you take it nicely? Do you take it comfortably? This is my respect, it's my integrity. This is my privacy. Nobody's got the right to this. You take serious offense to it. Don't you take offense to it? So the entire universe is Allah Ta'ala's. And everybody belongs to Allah Ta'ala. It is His private property. When it is His private property, you don't have the right to look at that. See how Allah takes it personally. So everything is going to be questioned about. the time management, money that you have got, the different faculties Allah Ta'ala has blessed you with. He's going to ask you about it. These faculties I gave you, then how did you use these faculties? The time that I blessed you, the wealth I gave you, the knowledge I bestowed you, these are all my gifts. How did you use them? Other Shaykh al-Hadith, Muhammad Zakaria Sahib Rahmatullah says, that many a times, in our staff compliment, I wouldn't be very familiar with someone. Not that I hated him or I disliked him, but I would not be just very familiar. And then, shortly I would have an experience, and after that experience, my familiarity will just grow up with him. And contrary to this, there may be a person that I was very familiar with, but after some experiences, now that familiarity just breaks, becomes bitter. So there was one Qari Sayyid Sahib or something, and the madrasa had sent him for some work to Calcutta. The madrasa had to receive some monies in Calcutta at a certain point. So he had to go and accomplish that work. So he returned and he gave a detailed report as to where he went, what monies he collected, and how he used the madrasa funds. So in that he writes, okay, whilst I was in Calcutta, so this was the money that I received, but I remember that I had one friend not far away from Calcutta, Chobis Pargana. So there was one friend there, and I thought, I am here now, Chobis Pargana perhaps is about 10-15 kilometers away from the center, so let me go and just meet him as well. So I used the madrasa money to go and meet this friend of mine's, and contrary to my expectations, I received much more donations for the madrasa at this point than what I collected in Calcutta. What I received here perhaps was 10,000. What I received here was 1,000,000. Here I received 10,000, and here I went purely for my own reasons. I went there for what? I had to go and meet my own friend. But contrary to my expectation, I received 1,000,000 here. So now he writes in his report that this journey that I had undertaken from Calcutta to Chobis Pargana, that I must bear the whole cost for that. Although ultimately it was to the benefit of the madrasa, but my intention to go to Pargana was not for the madrasa, was for my own personal reason. It was for my own personal reason that I need to fund that. See, trust. Nobody is there to go and see, alright. He come back to the madrasa and gave a report to the madrasa. You know what? I collected 1,000,000 rupees from you. I went off my own here. They'll give him a shabash, compliment. What can we do for you? You only collected 10,000 here. And of your own you collected 1,000,000 you collected. So what can we do for you? But now for them, the figures was not a great thing. The greater thing was, that have we secured the pleasure of Allah in what we are doing? The figure was an important thing, because they understood that karne wali zaat Allah Ta'ala ki hai. The one that will make things happen is Allah Ta'ala, not ourselves. But what Allah Ta'ala wants to see is how honest we are. What Allah Ta'ala wants to see, are we truthful? Are we honest? Or are we dishonest? Are we consistent or are we inconsistent? Is there any discrepancy in what we are doing? So he wants to see that, have we got a consistent plan? And how careful we are, or how honest we are in what we are doing, what we are managing. See, Allah Ta'ala will look in this small little thing, he will look, and he sees the level of honesty, then Allah Ta'ala progresses, he promotes from one level to the next level. He keeps on just giving, just adding. But you will have to go through this trial. Whoever it is, but he'll have to go through the trial. There was one great muhaddis, Abu Bakr Wasiti Ansari. They call him Sanadul Alam. Like, Hazrat Shah Waliullah Sahib Rahmatullah, you call him Sanadul Hind fil Hadith. Okay, if anybody is reporting Hadith, then he will see at some point, he'll have to go through Hazrat Shah Waliullah Sahib Rahmatullah when he's coming across the chain of narrators that I heard the Hadith from him, and hear the Hadith from so and so. So you have to go through Hazrat Shah Waliullah Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. So whoever is quoting the hadith from whichever part of the Indian subcontinent, then he would have to go through Hazrat Shah Waliullah Sahib Rahmatullah. So his chain was so acceptable that the whole Indian subcontinent is using his chain. Now Abu Bakr Wasiti Rahmatullah is the Sanadul Alam. The whole world uses Sanad. Whichever part of the world you are living, but you would have to go through his chain. So you could understand the level of his acceptance. He's come to Makkah Mukarramah, and perhaps he's stationed there, but now he's going through starvation, no food. No food, one day no food, second day. Now Makkah Mukarramah, and the heat we know of, right? And no food, absolutely nothing. Second day is nothing. Third day is, to the point of starvation, is absolutely nothing. Third day. Now you need to look at, see, when we are studying kitabs, etc., we're quoting these luminaries, personalities, then we need to examine their personal lives as well. It is a half job. We only look at their accomplishments, but we don't see what difficulties they had gone through. Alright, he wrote so many kitabs, it was very great. But his personal self, we look at his personal self. We hear of Imam Bukhari Sahib Rahmatullahi and his accomplishments, how many thousand hadiths he could memorize, etc. We hear about this. But his personal life, did we hear about his personal life? His allowance that would normally come to him is a delay. One day passed, no food. Second day passed, no food. Third day passed, no food. Right? Now he's on the point of starvation, and then he takes some herbs or something just to see that his hunger is satisfied. And on the fourth day, some unknown person comes and gives him a packet. That this is your money. But he said, no, I don't have the means of settling this debt. Then how can I take a debt from someone? If I can take a loan, then I must have something to settle the debt. But I don't have any means to settle the debt. Then how can I take a loan from someone? I won't take it. So this Abu Bakr Wasiti Rahmatullahi, he is going through starvation. One day and the second day and the third day. Now the third day is walking around the streets of Makkah Mukarramah and he finds a wallet. Now the masala is this, that if you are afraid that it's just going to be left here, it's going to be destroyed. Someone is going to steal it. Whoever's wallet it is, he will never receive it. And it becomes your duty to pick it up and to announce it. To advertise the thing. So he felt that it was lost in such a place, someone will just snatch it away, steal it and go away. The owner of this thing will never get this again. So, after a lot of deliberation, he picked it up. And not a day passed, one person came around and he says, you know, this wallet of mine, and if anybody can return it back to me, and I'm prepared to give him, if I remember the exact amount, about 500 dinars, 500 gold coins. So this Abu Bakr Wasiti Rahmatullah, he says that I heard the person carefully and I asked him, alright, what was the description of the wallet, what was the contents, because this is what you know, you need to ask the person, the description of the wallet and the contents. So the contents was exactly like he has explained, as well as the description of the wallet. So he went and surrendered the thing to him. Man, now, out of excitement, he takes out that 500 and he gives it to him. No. I haven't done this for any type of remuneration. I've done it only for the pleasure of Allah. No, I'm insisting. Whatever, you can insist, whatever. But I haven't picked it up for any type of remuneration. On his side, he is going through starvation. And this person wants to remunerate him without him even asking. I flatly refuse. Now, whatever we do, then there is a reward. You see, we think now that Allah Pak has forgotten, na'uzubillah. It's in record, and in time Allah Ta'ala will remunerate you. When you need it, Allah Ta'ala will give it back to you. If people, that you have been good to that person, he can remunerate you with 500, Allah Pak won't remunerate you. That man could remunerate you with 500, but Allah Ta'ala has forgotten. Hamari soch ka kya ho gaya? What's happened to our thought, our thinking process? So this Abu Bakr Wasiti Rahmatullah says, then I had to undertake a journey. Everything had settled, then I had to undertake a journey. See, Allah Pak has got a plan, and everything will unravel And the sacrifices that you have made is not unrecorded, it's recorded. And there's a time that you want that assistance will come to you. You have done something, and for what you have done, Allah Ta'ala is going to reward you. So for the wrong that you have done, you're going to pay for it. For the good that you have done, you're also going to be paid for it. So nothing is unrecorded. Everything is in record. And it's just a matter of time, with time everything will feature. So he's undertaken this journey, and there's a shipwreck, and everybody's drowned. By some act of a miracle, he's just saved. On a log or something, he's saved, and he sails himself right to an island. He walked, and at a distance he could see some signs of Muslims. So he walked in that distance, he saw a masjid, said, this is the best place, Mulla ka door, to masjid tak. Mulana, what he knows the masjid, what else he knows? I'll go to the masjid and see what I can do from there. Now, people of the town, they saw some mullah there now. So he said, I need to keep myself occupied. What must I do? So he began to teach those children Quran. He could see now these people are far away from deen. Let me start off some deen work at least. Now, they saw that this Abu Bakr Wasiti was an excellent reciter of the Quran Sharif. The children are picking up very well. Values are very good. So they thinking to themselves, lao uske per ke upar zanjeer bandh le. We have to tie this man up that he can't run away from here. So he'll be alright just now, just I'll run away. So how do we tie him up? The only way to tie him was getting married. See, his villagers, a lot of them are very sharp, right? So you don't treat them lightly. They'll tie you up that you can't run away. So let's tie him up. How to tie him up? Just get him married. So they got one girl, whatever, they spoke to her, she's happy to get married to this Qari Sahib, got them married. Now the nikah is over, so after all the doom-dum that happens in a marriage, now they're going for rukhsati, you know, he's going to receive his wife. So when he sees his wife, then his eyes are just fixed on her necklace. That stone that's on the necklace, his eyes are just fixed on that. Now he kept on looking, and he could look more than usual. You know, you look alright, you look right once, finished. But now he's looking more than usual for 1 minute almost, looking at the necklace, he's admiring that. So the girl's family, the girl's party, they began to complain to the Qari Sahib, this girl is feeling very, very hurt, you know. Instead of admiring her, you're admiring the necklace. What's wrong with you? You know, you're going to receive your wife. What are you supposed to be receiving? What are you supposed to be admiring? The wife, not the necklace and all that. Not the dress and all the other things that come with her. You're supposed to admire her. You're not admiring her, you're admiring these things here. What's wrong with you? So the Qari Sahib said, no, you people don't know, there's a story behind this. The story behind this is, you see this pearl that's on the necklace, this pearl here, I identify this, because I picked it up in Makkah Mukarramah, and I went and returned it to the owner, right? This is the same necklace that I've seen in Makkah Mukarramah, and this is the necklace that is on this woman, that's my wife. So when he said this, it was a loud takbir, everybody said, Allahu Akbar. Other Karisa got a shock, mele kya kasur kya? The whole house is echoing with Allahu Akbar. What happened? You want to kill me? What are they going to do to me now? So the Qari Sahib just relaxed. Well, nothing happened here. Tell me, what's the story here? So they say, you know what? Okay, this girl's father had just passed away a few weeks or a few months ago. But ever since he had returned from Hajj, his daily dua was, oh Allah Ta'ala, either I must meet this person that returned this amanat of mine in Makkah Mukarramah. And if I can't, if it's not decreed for me, then oh Allah Ta'ala, at least let that person marry my daughter. If it's not decreed for me to meet him, right, then at least Allah Ta'ala, let it be that he must marry my daughter. So, we are very grateful to Allah Ta'ala that his dua has been accomplished. You see, jo kaam khuda ke liye kiya gaya, it doesn't go, rai ka kabhi nahi jata. It doesn't go waste. But then you see within yourself, you have that degree of honesty, the degree of reliance in Allah Ta'ala, the degree of expecting the reward from none else than Allah Ta'ala. It can only happen with sincerity. And the sincerity can only come right if the iman is right. If the iman is not right, then the sincerity can't be right. Because the essence of iman is what? The essence of iman is to believe that good and harm can only come from Allah Ta'ala. That Allah Ta'ala is the controller. Right? When your heart is fixed that Allah Ta'ala is the controller, right? He can make things work and He can stop things from happening. He's the only person. He's the control. But if the insincerity has gone off, say that, I will be good to this charger, he will see me right. I will talk to him, I'll make a plan, he'll make a plan for me. So where's Allah Ta'ala? Then Allah Ta'ala, you have moved Allah Ta'ala from the equation. You thought that charger will make things work. This person will make things work. So there's a weakness in iman. And the weakness on iman will impact on the sincerity. So the iman is right, the sincerity will be right. The iman is weak, then the sincerity also will be affected. So anyway, the nikah is done and they have a child. Right? And not long after the child was born, the mother passed away. As the mother passed away, so all her estate had to be wound up. So who is the heirs now? The son and the father. They become the estate. Because the only successor of the marhum woman that passed away is the son and the father. Alright. Mother passed away, and not a few days later, the son also passed away. So who becomes the owner? The father becomes the owner. When first to the father and the son, and when the son passed away, then the entire estate comes to the father. So you see the same wallet that was returned for the sake of Allah Ta'ala came back to him. And came back to him with a price, with a daughter, with a nikah and everything. Secure job. How much things he got, see? For a secure job, he had a wife. All that what he picked up all came back to him. And with all the honor and respects, with all the honor, the respect, the whole town people are having that type of love and respect for him. Now, if he had pocketed that, or he wanted some type of a worldly remuneration, if there was a flaw in his sincerity, would all these things have worked out for him? It would have never worked out for him. It only worked out for him because of the level of sincerity, the level of consciousness, the level of awareness, the level of the iman, that karne darne wali zat Allah Ta'ala ki hai. That Allah Ta'ala wills it will happen, Allah Ta'ala wills it will not happen. So, where we are going off today is, you know, he is the spanner in the works, and this person here, he is creating problems for us. At no point in time do we refer to Allah Ta'ala, you will make it work. You will, it will happen. And you don't will, it will never happen. So, do we think like that? Do we believe it like that? Whether it's in our dini work, whether it's in our dunya work, we do strive, we need to strive, Allah Ta'ala wants us to work. But do we have that level of confidence, that assurance, and that trust in Allah Ta'ala, that Allah Ta'ala will make it work? See, we're talking of trust. Reliance, trust, honesty, an integral part of a Muslim's life. Every Nabi is called an Ameen. Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam himself, even before the advent of prophethood, he is called Muhammad al-Ameen. Our Nabi is starting off, his whole journey of Nubuwwah is starting off with what? With the word Ameen. Trust. You see that every Nabi is proclaiming, is announcing that he is Ameen. He is honest. So how important? Before Nubuwwah, he is called Ameen. As he becomes a Nabi and other Anbiya, they are all known as honest people. Nobody can show that they are dishonest people. Then this world will remain as long as there is honesty. As long as there is honesty, there is that consciousness, there is that awareness that there is a thing like answerability, accountability. As long as that is in people's mind, then this thing will continue. But the moment that consciousness of amanat is gone, that consciousness of honesty is gone from people's systems, people's minds, see, it's gone out of their minds, then there's no need for Allah Ta'ala to continue with this world. As long as this consciousness, awareness of amanat is in people's minds, then there is the need to continue with this life. But that is gone, it's no more in your mind. It's no more in your life, then what's the need to keep the world? So therefore the hadith will say, إِذَا دُيِّئَتِ الْأَمَانَةُ فَانْتَزِرِ السَّاعَةِ, that when this amanat is lost, then just wait for qiyamah. Now look at it, now presently as we stand, in the whole world, right? Whole world, to maintain law and order, right? To maintain law and order, there's so many systems. There is the police, there is the judicial, there is the jail, right? Then in this police also, nowadays you see so many different type of police. Law and order enforcement. What do I know? As you see this vans, so many different types like you never see before. You know, about 30 years ago, you never see all these things here. Yeah? There were so many different types of police. But with all that, I ask you, is the crime reducing or is escalating? Is the crime decreasing or increasing? And if we are complaining, the whole world is complaining. What is our complaint is the complaint of the entire world. We've got so many systems to maintain law, but the crime is just escalating. So where is this escalating? It's escalating at this point, that consciousness of amanat, of trust, consciousness of reckoning, accountability is gone, it's deleted from the mind. There's no more in the mind that you're going to stand before Allah Ta'ala and you'll have to give a detailed account for every second, every cent, every moment of yours, you'll have to give an account. So that is out of the mind. When it's out of the mind, then you think, now I can act as I want to. I can act as a baboon, as a monkey, as a gorilla. See? I can act as I want to. I got no answerability, no consciousness of, no awareness I got. So, إِذَا دُيِّئَتِ الْأَمَانَةُ فَانْتَزِرِ السَّاعَةِ, when this aspect of amanat, honesty is gone, out of the system, what's the need? What's the need to keep this whole system going on? And for that matter, if you opened up a business, that's a business you opened up, like a mall or something, created different departments, right? You got managers to run the whole thing. Every department, you got different managers, capable people to run the thing. Running well, you'll keep it. And you will invest in it. And you will take an interest in it. But now, after some 10 years or so, you see that it's taking a dip. First year is taking a dip of 10 million. So right, let me give it a chance, perhaps the next year. But the next year is taking a dip of 100 million. So now, hey, I must close down. Now whatever I've got, I have to take out from my reserves and run this thing here. So before that happens, I need to close this thing down. So your business also, if that thing is running down, there isn't the consciousness of responsibility, honesty. So no, let's close this whole thing down. I don't need to continue with it. So with the same token, when that consciousness of honesty is gone, answerability is gone, then there's no need to keep this world. So in this time and day, the greatest fear and concern is the consciousness that we have to stand before Allah Ta'ala. For every cent, for every moment, for every time that we are spending, every gift that we are enjoying, it's coming with an answer. You need to answer for it. You need to give some supporting evidence that I use this for this. I use this and I use this for this. Something you have to justify. Have you got it? Present before Allah Ta'ala, have you got anything to justify? I use this and I use it for a just cause. I use this and I use this for a wrong cause. Have you got that? So the way we get this right is at least 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the evening, you think about the day of reckoning, right? And every moment of yours, Allah Pak is asking you, this moment, and this knowledge, this gift, this wealth, this health that I have given you, your youth that I have blessed you, Allah is asking, I'm standing before Him, He's asking me, the knowledge I gave you, the wealth I gave you, the time I gave you, the gifts I gave you. So what did you do? How did you use all these gifts of mine? Have you got any type of a sensible reply for that? When you ask yourself, you're asking yourself in the morning, you're asking yourself at the end of the day, as though you're taking hisab, you're taking an account, then the business of life has got a meaning. But you're not cashing in, you're not accounting. Then I ask you, any business that you're doing,
Has it got any reason for you to continue?
No, you're not accounting, no balances, no systems you are keeping. What's the need of continuing?